Welcome to the Voices of Windrush with me, Sinai Flary, and I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, Mr. Patrick Vernon.
Hi again.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. Still here in the studio.
Recovered from the USA?
No, I had a fantastic time. I was in Washington and New York. I was looking at museums and mental health projects, and it was a fantastic experience. It was really hot as well.
Today we're going to be talking about Windrush Day. Yeah. I know that's really important to you.
Yes.
What are your hopes for Windrush Day this year?
Well, this lots of things are happening around Windrush Day. There are so many events. I mean, there were quite a few events last year, but obviously this year is the first year that it's been adopted by the government. But there's lots of events happening in London. Loads of events are happening outside the country. I think it's going to be quite good. And also there are going to be some events which is around direct action. So it's going to be a mixture of commemoration, and there'll be some protests in between that as well. But I think it's important that we have the day, because it's about acknowledging that not just simply about the Windrush generation and their contribution legacy. It's about that we are here and the visibility of us, and we don't have to wait for Black History Month or any other dates around recognising our history and heritage as well. And what's interesting, because when I was in America, I actually spoke at an event and I was talking about the history of Windrush, and for lots of African Americans, they don't really understand that whole Windrush story.
Mm.
So the only way I could explain it to them is just imagine if the government said to second or third generation Irish people, Polish people, Italians, go back home. And they said, yeah, we get it now. We understand what is the importance of the impact of Windrush, because that's what we did. We came, we were invited, we contributed. 71 years on, it's about that recognition. And the recognition, I went to the African American Museum at the Smithsonian, and you know, it just blew my mind away.
Mm.
I was there for a whole day. I met up with some of the curators, and it was a fantastic experience. And I just realised that we need to have a permanent fixture of our history.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we've got Black Culture Archives, and there's other institutions, but we need to have almost like our own a permanent exhibition, a permanent presence of the Windrush generation contribution. Otherwise, it'll just disappear again, and then we'll have another scandal, or something else will happen,
you know,
as well.
Well, I mean, I know a great thing that's happening, and we've got loads of fantastic events happening on Windrush Day.
Colourful radio.
Thank you for joining us on the Voices of Windrush. I'm Sinai Flary, and I'm joined by
Patrick Vernon.
Could you please introduce yourself for our listeners and tell us about your organisation?
Right, I am the Right Reverend Dr. Desmond Jadu. And for this purpose, I'm a local minister, community activist, and I'm also chair of the Windrush Movement UK.
Okay, fantastic. And how did you feel when you first got wind of the Windrush scandal? How did it make you feel?
Well, to be honest, we've known about this brewing for about 5-6 years, in all honesty, because we had people who were actually stuck in Jamaica as well, who couldn't come back, and we've had various battles over the years. I mean, I think it was, for me, it's good news because it finally got highlighted the issues of mass inequality that the hostile environment was placing upon members of the Windrush generation and their descendants. And because when we were bringing it to government attention and MPs' attentions, it's as though it was falling on deaf ears and they wouldn't believe or acknowledge what we were saying. But clearly, once it got highlighted, they realised that it is a serious issue, and they were scampering around like headless chickens to try and sort it out. And we can see the ramifications of that. But importantly, we also saw the damage that it has caused to members within our community, and the suffering and indeed deaths that resulted, that were as a result of this hostile environment.
Yeah, so Desmond, I know I've been working close with you on the whole issue of the scandal, and you launched Defend Windrush. Can you tell me what the key things you've been doing for the last 12 months? And obviously, as we're leading up to Windrush Day, what are your plans?
Okay, sure. I mean, one of the things is, once this broke just before Windrush last year, shortly before, and we did Windrush Week in Birmingham for Windrush 70th, which was a whole week of events back to back. And Birmingham was the only city in the UK that did that. And then one of the things we did, when we founded the Windrush Movement, and the purpose of the Windrush Movement was to highlight the inequality, but also as well not just be a rambling voice, actually do something. So what we've done, we forged links with the Home Office, and not a friendly link, I'd hasten to add, and what I call an accountable link, meaning that we held surgeries, we brought the Home Office there, we had understandings with them that there was no enforcement going on. There's no enforcement proceedings going on the day they come to wherever we are. And we've been working with them to get people, obviously, registered and get their status regularized. We've also built up dialogue links with them as well. In addition to that, we held round tables. We contributed to lessons learnt, probably just like yourself, Patrick. And then on top of that, we then are now taking part in immigration roundtables with the Home Office about doing outreach programs for the compensation claim. One of the things that we did as well, we highlighted successfully the impact upon families generally, not just the victim or the primary person, as we call it, but also as well the husband, the children, because we had one lady here in Birmingham where a husband's prostate cancer was exacerbated under stress that he may lose his wife. His wife's hair fell out. Children dropped out of university because of the anxiety and stress that they faced also. So it's highlighting that and say that something needs to be done clearly on that. And we're continuing that. We've held meetings in Preston. We've got a sister organization in Nottingham. We are doing meetings across the West Midlands. Our next meeting's on the 27th of June in Coventry. We're doing that as well. So, and we're supporting other organizations as much as we can. And following the mass deportation flight on the 6th of February, ironically, I went out the same day on a different flight, I hasten to add.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Yes, you know, and that was ironic. That wasn't planned, by the way. But, you know, we do say the Lord works in mysterious ways. And someone rang me whilst I was boarding my flight at Gatwick. And what we found out, I mean, I was able to link up with some people in Jamaica who had been deported and listen to their experience as it was raw. And, you know, it questioned a lot of things that the British government have been saying about support networks once people get to the Caribbean, etc. Because, you know, there just isn't anything. Some people say there are, but I've been told categorically by about 10 different people that there is nothing there. And we have to hold the British government to account for those undertakings that they give also. In terms of Windrush this year, when we've decided in Birmingham, if it's like Windrush 75 or Windrush 80, we'll have a week of events. This year, there's a couple of week during the week events. This morning, there's a church service to launch the week. And then on Tuesday, we're feeding our elders and an elders lunch. Friday night, it's an entertainment night for our elders at a place called Panelcroft Village, which is a retirement village in the Newtown area of Birmingham. Saturday in Perry Bar, just around the corner from where they're going to hold a Commonwealth Games place called the Sports Hub, we've got a family fun day and public service day. Public service day has been amalgamated into the family day because they will have old vehicles there, old ambulances, the NHS will be there, the police will be there, the fire service will be there, but they're bringing in a lot of old vehicles that our elders would have driven or been in, you know, or been a part of. So very much a trip down memory lane, a little bit of fun for the children, a gala dinner at Villa Park on Saturday night, where the proceeds from that dinner will go towards the Defend Windrush Fund as well. And then next Sunday is our church service, 5 till 8, at the Assembly of the Firstborn Church in Littles Road. I'll be taking that service. But with regard to the service of Thanksgiving and commemoration, we've now given birth to two other services at the moment. Derby, which we launched last year, will be holding their second annual service this year. And also this year, there will be a service at Coventry Cathedral as well, which is an offshoot of our service as well. So we're starting to spread it around, which is good, because one of the things is that I've found over the years is that we have not been appreciating as a community the contribution of our elders by teaching our young people the history. And that history is so rich and that contribution is so significant. We need to appreciate it, because if we appreciate it, then others will. But if we don't appreciate it, we can't expect others to appreciate it.
Absolutely. And I mean, what sort of action do you think the community could take to ensure that a scandal like this never happens again?
Right. That's right. That's right up my street. One of the purposes of a Windrush movement is not just to deal with the issues of the Windrush scandal. We're talking about having our own black political voice. an independent black voice that is independent to political parties. Because one of the things I've found is too many political parties will support you. However, there are too many strings attached to that. Our ethos is particularly black, period. We make no bones about it. We're not prepared to apologize for that. Because at one point, under our elders, we were the significant minority. We are no longer the significant minority. We're nowhere near that. And because of that, many liberties are taken with our communities. We suffer every single form of disproportionality there is. I don't need to list them because we know what they are. We are at the back of the queue for everything. And that's because we lack what I call robust political representation. People that will fight for our community. And indeed, I believe people who are prepared to die for equality and social justice for our community. Because the facts are, at the end of the day, what's going on with a lot of our youngsters now, the mass disaffection that they face, it's becoming interbreeding, it's becoming intergenerational. And we have to break that cycle and bring our community back to the forefront. And the issues that we face, for example, in terms of reflective governance, we need to ensure that that is addressed. And the only way we're going to address that is by, and we've been saying it for years, we all joining arms together, linking arms and standing firm for what we believe in.
That's really great. As you know, Theresa May agreed last year for a National Women's Day, which a number of us have been campaigning for a number of years. And you've organised a number of events over the last few years. What's your view on the government adopting National Women's Day and how should we use that?
Adopting National Women's Day, great. I think it was a wonderful feat, thanks to people like yourself. You know, Arthur Torrington, we've got the Wild West Indian Project up here in the West Midlands, headed by Horace Barnes. But the thing was, what a lot of people don't understand, Patrick, is that many of these organizations were already commemorating Windrush the 22nd of June anyway. So all that happened with Theresa May's announcement was that it was just a confirmation of something that was already happening. So I'm not going to place a lot of credit at the door of the Prime Minister. However, announcing it formally, all she did was formalise it. So because there are many who were saying, well, it's as a knee-jerk reaction to the Windrush scandal. No, it wasn't, because I'm not prepared to insult the hard work of others. And that includes your work, Patrick, as well. Mm-hmm. Importantly, I think it's a day for empowerment, encouragement, education, thanksgiving and celebration. That's what it's about. It's about letting our youngsters know the hard work that our elders did when they came here, when they came to a country from the nice sunny Caribbean, some people say poverty-stricken, but there's more richness there than there was here. Because when they came here, they got off the ship or the plane, and they were hit by baptism of fire. They said it was freezing cold. But the discrimination that they faced, no blacks, no Irish, no dogs, for example, right? And how did you overcome no blacks, no Irish, no dogs? They clubbed together and they threw partner and they bought houses and they rented rooms to, you know, friends, neighbors. You know, we had so many aunts and uncles, and the size I am, Patrick, you've seen me physically. You know, you must have known that I had a lot of dinners.
Well, we all had lots of dinners, but it depends how much we can have got fit anyway. That's the story.
Yeah, we got plenty of dinners, you know, because every you know, when we finished school, everywhere we went, you know, you want some dinner, you were frowned upon if you refused.
Yeah.
But importantly, what I'm getting at is there is the sense of community. So we need to be teaching people, our youngsters, this. Because when we look at how some of our youngsters behave today and are violent towards each other, they could be violent to someone that their mom, someone's child that their mom grew up with, or their grandparents are friends, or indeed their grandparents are distant relatives. The thing about it is we've got to use this opportunity to really educate and empower, and also as well organize, strategize, and move forward as one community. So things like the Windrush scandal and the other disproportionalities that we face and the underrepresentation in authorities that we face, we have to use this as an opportunity to galvanise our community so that we become significant.
Thank you so much for talking to us this morning on The Voices of Windrush. Before you go, if people want to come to one of your events, where can they get in touch with you?
They can go to Windrush 1948, which are the numbers, central.uk. They can email me at desjadoo, D-E-S-J-A-D-D-O-O, at desjadoo.org.uk. Or I'll give you a telephone number as well, 07946 374577. Most of the events are free. The only event which is not free is the gala dinner. All the other events are free. Thank you. Bless you both.
Thank you. Take care.
Colourful radio.
You're listening to the Voices of Windrush with me, Sinai Flery, and I'm joined by...
I'm Patrick Vernon.
And on the line, we have Reverend Clive Foster, all the way in Nottingham. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. It's great to be on your show, so thank you very much for the opportunity.
No problem. Could you introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us about your organisation?
So my name is Pastor Clive Foster. I'm one of the senior pastors of a church in Nottingham called a Pilgrim Church. It's a majority black-led church, and we have been working quite extensively since the Windrush scandal to try and support people who have been affected in our communities. So my role has been one of the coordinators with that and working both locally and nationally to get justice for those people who have been, you know, adversely affected as a result of the Windrush scandal.
Have you found people in your congregation are using faith to sort of lean on to get through these hard times that are related to the Windrush scandal?
Very much so, because when the scandal broke, the very Sunday morning before Theresa May spoke to the heads of government of the Caribbean, we made an announcement in our local church and said, you know, you may be hearing stories of people being deported, detained. If you're concerned, apprehensive, please come and talk to the ministers. We were astonished at how many people came to us after the service and were saying, Clive, I'm worried about my father. He hasn't been documented. I'm concerned about my brother and so forth. And we recognized as well that as a church, not only did we have to do the spiritual things in terms of praying and showing compassion, but we had to simply act. And so we decided to put on some surgeries which comprised of supporting the pastoral needs, because people were hurt and distressed, and also providing the legal support. So over the past over a year now, we've been putting on surgeries comprising of providing pastoral support, people's faith and concern, and also providing some legal support as well.
So, Clive, I remember meeting you on a march in Nottingham last summer.
That's right.
It was one of the very first marches, I think. I mean, there were events taking place in London, but I think that was one of the early marches. Can you just talk to us about the importance of communities coming together and more importantly, the work that you've been doing in the community around your surgeries?
So it's really important that we energise and mobilise our communities to recognise that if we remain silent, so many things are going to be taken away from us and lost. And so there are many different ways in which we can, you know, raise our voices and keep the concern in the public domain about the injustice that's happened. So, you know, as you mentioned, Patrick, one of the things that we did is we were part of a march. There is a national movement, several national movements. Windrush Movement UK is one of them, and we joined up with Desmond Jadu, and we organized a march in Nottingham. What we did in Nottingham is that we worked with the other churches as well in Nottingham, the majority black-led churches. We sort of made inroads with other community groups like the Refugee Forum. And because of using those networks, we was able to mobilize people to come out and actually join in the march. We also worked closely, you know, with the local authority, you know, to whatever degree and level that we could. But it's really important as communities that we band together and come together and stand together for justice, because the greater the voice, the greater the impact, and the greater is the opportunity to actually change things in this area, which is so important.
I think one of the key issues, as you know, is a lot of people are still not coming forward to sort out their status. As you know, there's been a launch of the compensation scheme. What kind of things have you been doing on a very practical level to support people?
So one of the things we recognise, as you rightly said, is still this fear factor about coming forward and getting the status settled. I mean, in our surgery, we've seen over 200 people. But I tell you what, that is still scratching the tip of the iceberg. Mm. So as a church, we're trying to use our trust and confidence, because as you know with these things, this is not something that has just happened last year or in 2017 or 20 whenever. this has been going on for a long time in terms of immigration issues. So we've always been supporting people. So as a church, we're trying to use the reputation of the church to build trust and confidence. We're opening our doors. We're saying, look, there is going to be no enforcement here. You can come and speak to us confidentially, and we will help you to get to the next steps, you know, and directing them to use the Home Office Task Force and reinsuring them. I have to say that it's still difficult. We had an example where we had a black male who came to one of our surgeries, and we directed him, and we ran it in conjunction with the Home Office. We took him to a private room where a Home Office person was waiting for him, and it was a white Home Office person, and he refused to engage with him. He just turned around. And so we had to talk with him and say, look, I know how you feel and how distressing you feel, but you have to now try and move over this. And we fortunately, there was a black male from the Home Office we directed him to. But that's an example in the type of still level of reluctance and fear in terms of coming forward.
Has there been a harrowing case that's really touched you in the surgeries?
Yeah, I tell you what, Patrick, I felt really hurt when I saw, gentlemen like my father's age and senior citizens, and a gentleman came to our surgery, and he was struggling to walk a little bit, and I sat down, I was talking with him, he wrote down his name, and he wrote down some details on a form. And he wrote down that he was in the British Army. He was part of the British Army. Hmm. And he was scared that his citizenship papers wasn't sorted. And I thought to myself, look at this. Here's a man who was prepared to give his life for the country. And now he feels fearful that he's going to be chucked out of the country. We've also had stories where people have told us, look, they said to us, we've got had my brother, another gentleman, his brother died in the Caribbean, in Jamaica. He wanted to get a passport to go. They said, we can give you a passport to go, but you can't come back. As wow. simple as that. Hmm. And those are a couple of cases that we've been dealing with. So, and I think we have to accept as well, we're talking about a cohort of people who are vulnerable. And so sometimes just seeing, we had a surgery just on Friday, and just seeing people, you know, coming in with the walking sticks, and, having to navigate a complex forms and, you know, having come here knowing that they wanted to give the best of their lives to this country and they were legitimate citizens. And then now, you know, in the twilight of the years, having to navigate this issue is very sad.
Do you think the Home Office and other government departments respect and acknowledge the work that you're doing, and other organisations up and down the country having these surgeries, these events, engaging? Do you think it's been a reciprocal relationship?
I have to say, I think it's been very poor. I do wish the government and the Home Office will understand that if they are genuine, and I'm sure they are to an extent in terms of wanting to right the wrongs, given the comments of the Home Secretary, you know, do right by the Windrush generation, that they do see there is a need for strong partnership working with grassroots organisations who are trying their best without zero funding to get people to come forward and participate in the process. And I think more needs to be done in terms of assisting organisations like ourselves and right across the country, which I'm aware of, which is trying to support people in the process, and they just haven't got the resources to do that. I mean, we're flat out in terms of capacity, and it's only on the goodwill of individuals. But the Home Office and government agencies need to be doing more to support grassroots organisations who are participating in getting this right and seeing that justice prevails.
Can I ask you, do you have any events planned for Windrush Day? And if so, tell us a little bit about that.
So we are participating on Saturday on the Windrush Day of Action. This has been organised by BME Lawyers for Justice. So it's a national organisation in response to Windrush and other immigration situations. So this coming Saturday, in Nottingham, we'll be meeting at the Market Square. In fact, at the Speaker's Corner, Brian Clough statue, and we'll be having a a banner on furling in coordinating with other cities around the country which are unfurling banners on that day. And we'll be having speakers, poetry. And we are just marking that day to remember that there are still people who desperately need to have justice as a result of the Windrush scandal. So that's happening on the Saturday. There's also another event happening in Nottingham called the Pioneer 492 Project, which is documenting Windrush stories. That's happening throughout the day as well. And on the Sunday, the 23rd, we're having a special Windrush commemorative service at the Pilgrim Church, 6 p.m. And we're having guest speakers there as well, and just celebrating the contribution of the Windrush generation. So two events that we're participating in over the weekend, on the Saturday and the Sunday.
That sounds fantastic. Now, if people want to get in touch with you, Pastor Clive Foster, where can they reach you online?
So online, you can look for a Facebook page called Notts Windrush Day of Action. You can also contact on our website, the Pilgrim Church, which is thepilgrimchurch.org. And you can also contact myself, Pastor Clive Foster. You can give me my mobile, which is 07-881-656399.
Pastor Clive Foster in Nottingham, thank you for joining us here on The Voices of Windrush with me, Sinai Flary, and my co-host, Mr. Patrick Vernon. All the best, and thank you so much for speaking to us.
Thank you.
Colourful radio.
The Voices of Windrush with me, Sinai Flary, and my co-host,
Patrick Vernon.
And on the line, we have Miss Zita Holborn. Could you please introduce yourself for our listeners and tell us about your organisation, please?
Okay, so I'm the National Chair of Black Activists Rising Against Cuts and also one of the co-founders of BAME Lawyers for Justice. And our primary focus at the moment for BAME Lawyers for Justice is Windrush justice and related justice campaigns for those that have been caught up by the hostile environment. Barrack UK was co-founded by myself and Lee Jasper, and its main focus when we founded it over 10 years ago was around the adverse disproportionate impact of austerity on black workers, service users and communities. But as we've evolved, our remit has widened and broadened to include all the racism and injustice that came hand in hand with austerity for black communities in the UK.
Okay. Now, taking it back to the Windrush scandal, how did you feel when the scandal first unfolded? When did you become aware of there was such a scandal that was going to unfold?
About 10 years before it unfolded. So right. I was involved in co-founding an organisation called Movement Against Xenophobia, which was an organisation that was set up to counter and try and challenge the immigration bill, as it was then, that was coming through, because we anticipated that wouldn't just be targeting people trying to come to the UK, that it would have an impact on people that were already here, migrant communities that were established and recent migrant communities as well. And so it's something that I've been campaigning on for many years in terms of, migrant rights. And so way before the scandal broke out and we saw, all the newspaper headlines and the features in The Guardian, I had actually written a piece for The Guardian about a charter flight a couple of years before that had gone to Jamaica asking how can 50 people just be snatched, taken, and deported, and nothing is said. So deportations have been going on for a long time. So for over 10 years, I've been campaigning on deportation issues and supporting individuals that are impacted by deportation.
So Zita, I've known you for many years, and you've campaigned on a whole range of issues. Can you explain the significance of the hostile environment and the Windrush scandal? What is the implications around not just simply the black community, but all communities?
Okay. I think, in terms of the hostile environment, you've got two sides to it. You've got the fact that the government aren't allowing new migrants to come into the UK or trying to block people. Of course, currently from the EU, they can't do that. But Brexit is part of that hostile environment. You know, it was a very racist campaign, the Brexit campaign, and it was definitely targeting new migrants or potential migrants coming into the UK as well. And I coordinate aid convoys and distributions to refugees. I've been doing that with Barrack for over 5 years. And a lot of the people that I work with who are in northern France, who just stuck there in limbo, are amongst those people that are being demonised and labelled by the government as coming in to take jobs, to steal jobs, economic migrants, even though there'll be people that are fleeing climate poverty, amongst other things. So you've got all of that attack on migrants and trying to scapegoat them as the cause of lack of jobs, lack of housing, rather than holding their own hands up and saying, actually, you know, they've caused austerity, they've put in these austerity measures. It's an attempt to divide and rule communities so that migrant communities get blamed. And then you also have this other side that has come through the Immigration Act, which is seeking to create an apartheid-like state between different communities in the UK. And, of course, within that is the Windrush, what's being described as the Windrush scandal. People who were invited to come to the UK several decades ago have made their lives here, have contributed to the UK economy, worked hard all their lives, raised their children and grandchildren, who were told that they were British citizens, that this was the mother country. They were part of the British Empire. But in terms of the wider people, I mean, we've got a focus on Windrush at the moment, but actually their multiple generation families have also been impacted. So where children or grandchildren in later years or decades have tried to come and join their family members and, you know, their next of kin, they're also being targeted by the hostile environment. So you have young people who can't even go to university or college because of their immigration status, yet they were brought to the UK by family when they were small children. But there's an impact on, you know, people from other Commonwealth or former Commonwealth countries. So it isn't just people from the Caribbean. It's people from primarily African and Asian countries in addition to the Caribbean. And effectively, it's people of colour. It's black people, BAME people, whichever way you want to describe them. Barrack will use the term black in its broadest political sense. But it's those people. It isn't people from New Zealand or Canada or Australia who have been targeted by this hostile environment and immigration policies. So in my view, it's deeply racist at the heart of it. It's not just a cop-up and a mistake that's been made. Racism is at the heart of it.
I think we recognise the issue of structural racism has a much of big part to play. So in terms of the organisation of BME Lawyers, what things have you been doing over the last 12 months and what are your plans?
Okay, so we have held two national conferences, one in London, one in Nottingham. We've challenged the government. We've raised questions through Parliament. We've raised questions legally. We've organised a national day of action to build for the one that's coming up, which I'll come on to talk about. We've events simultaneously in seven cities. We've built, links and connections between groups in different cities that are campaigning around Windrush issues, brought together individuals, lawyers, barristers, and all the organisations that make up BME Lawyers to work together to campaign collectively on these issues. We've held events in Parliament, and actually at the core of this is supporting and helping and assisting individuals who are impacted. So, you know, many of the lawyers and barristers in our group are representing those individuals and launching legal challenges. But we've also run campaigns for individuals or tried to support and intervene on their individual cases and given them, you know, practical support and advice when they're going through threats and they're either detained or, you know, they're told that they're going to be deported to try and stop that from happening. And indeed, you know, I'm in contact also with people who after they're deported to see, you know, to try and continue to support them where possible. So coming up on Saturday, the 22nd of June, which is National Windrush Day, we have a National Windrush Day of Action, which we've been building for over recent months. And each of the seven cities that are participating, and I'll try and get this right in terms of it's London, Nottingham, Liverpool, Birmingham, Manchester, Derby, and Leeds. So those are the seven cities. But we're also seeing that quite a lot of other groups in different cities are doing something on the day, whether it's a photo opportunity or a small march. And they're actually coming. We're finding out about them even in the last few days. So Leicester, I've just come across, have organised something for the Windrush Day of Action, and they've posted up their banner on social media saying we'll be doing an action on the day we support the Windrush Day of Action. In London, we are going to be doing a short march from Downing Street to Westminster Bridge, and we're going to be doing a banner drop, which is what we've recommended to, you know, the other cities, but they're all doing something slightly different. And in London, we have this big 10-metre banner. So we've had banner-making workshops last week. We have another banner-making workshop on Monday night to finish the banner. And then that banner will be dropped, you know, held over the side of the bridge. We have a photographer that will document it from a bridge across the way with a message for the government, you know, that we are here. We are protesting what's happening. We are going to continue to campaign on this issue. We've also just had an event in Parliament, which was hosted by Diane Abbott last Thursday, a Windrush Roundtable, where we've produced, you know, with the contributions of everybody present, a list of action points, which will form an action plan of what we want to do going forward to challenge the injustice that's still continuing, and indeed to try and stop anything like this happening again, because there are still deportations happening, you know, on commercial flights as well as these mass deportations that I talked about. So there's a lot of activity going on. We want people to get involved. We really want people to come down and join the national days. And if you're not in one of those cities or you can't get to one of those cities to participate, you know, we would really welcome you organising something in your own area, even if it's just, you know, a photo opportunity where you're holding up some handmade placards or cards which say we support the National Day of Action. Here we are in this town, village or city, to post that on social media and share with us. So that we send quite a powerful and strong message to the government that there are a lot of people working collectively, standing up. And now we know that it is the National Windrush Day. We know there are lots of events to commemorate and celebrate the contribution of Caribbean people to the UK. So we're not saying you have to do one or the other. If you want to do both, you know, what we're saying is demonstrate, then celebrate. You can do both if you want to. But we felt it's very, very important on this day where the government are saying, OK, we have this National Windrush Day, and we know, Patrick, that you've fought for that day, and it's important to acknowledge everything you've done to fight for that day. And it was quite right that we have a National Day of Action. We're not opposed to it. Mm. We're just saying in the midst of all of this scandal that's still there and horrific injustice and pain and misery that people are going through, we felt it's important to say something on that particular day. But we do thank you and acknowledge everything you've done to work with others for us to have a National Day of Action, a National Windrush Day.
Yeah, I recognise that. And And as you say, people will be demonstrating and other people will be commemorating. So it's going to be interesting what's going to happen and how it's going to be covered in the media in particular.
Yes.
Miss Zita.
We hope to get some coverage. Sorry.
No, please do continue.
No, I'm saying, well, let's hope we get some good coverage on that day from the media. I mean, you know, we'll be working hard to put something out. But we hope that they do document that this scandal is still continuing at the same time as documenting the celebrations that are happening.
Miss Zita Holborn, thank you so much for joining us on the Voices of Windrush. Before you go, where can people get in touch with you if they need to?
Okay, so they can email us, which is a very long email address. It's BAME Lawyers for Justice, and it is the word for, at gmail.com. There's also our Twitter handle, which is at BAMEFOR, BAMEFOR. And there's another Twitter handle, which is at Windrush Day June. And then on Facebook, we have the Barrack, and also on Twitter, at Barrack UK, BARACUK. On Facebook, there are Facebook events set up. So I think if you just put Windrush Day of Action, some things will come up. There's also on Facebook, Windrush Action, Barrack UK, and BAME Lawyers for Justice groups and pages. So you should be able to find us through all of that. And we also have the same things on Instagram too.
Thank you so much for taking time out to speak to us this morning. We wish you all the best and have a great day.
Okay, thanks again,
Thank
Zita.
Thank you so much for inviting me on.
Colourful Radio.
We are now joined on the line by Adrian Morell, all the way in Preston. Could you please introduce yourself for our listeners and tell us about your role at your organisation?
Yes, my name is Adrian Morell. I'm the director of Windrush Initiatives. We started several years ago working in the African Caribbean community in Preston.
And how did you first become aware of the Windrush scandal?
I think it was last year, which was a shock. I didn't know. Like a lot of people, I was confused about it, and I wasn't sure what was going on. I don't think the people who was in charge knew what was going on either, so I think everybody was confused. But it was last year, just over a year ago.
And, I mean, how did it make you feel? Did you have any family or friends that were affected, or anyone in the community in Preston?
Yeah, we had a few people, and people that I know who I didn't realise didn't have their passport, but they knew they didn't have the passport, but kept quiet about it. And there was a lot of people who weren't sure whether they were British citizens or not. There was so much confusion going on, but I felt angry at the time because you had these teenagers, most of them were teenagers or in their early 20s, who were invited over here 71 years ago to help rebuild Britain that was struggling after the war to get on its feet. And then when they got here, had to deal with so much abuse and discrimination. And then when they're given the best years of their life, then they're going to say that we don't want you anymore. Well, I just found it disgusting.
And what can you tell us about your plans? I mean, I know, like you're saying, you felt angry and disappointed, and I feel like many people did. And I know that you've been very hands-on in sort of the community in Preston, in sort of rallying mm-hmm. people together, putting on events. I mean, can you tell us about your plans for your first official Windrush Day? Well, it's not your first, but for your Windrush Day event this weekend.
We decided to celebrate Windrush. It was about when it was Windrush 60, so it's something about 11 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then 7 years ago, along with a couple of other friends, Melissa Cartwright and Carol Harris, I said to them, well, how come we don't celebrate it or acknowledge it? How come Britain doesn't acknowledge these people who came here all those years ago to help rebuild Britain? How come it's overlooked? And when we looked at the elders in our community who are now got walking sticks and can't get out as much as they used to. We just felt like we had to do something to show them that, listen, we, even though nobody else is saying it, we're going to say it. We appreciate what you've done. So I had 3 weeks to plan. It wasn't a festival, it was just a get-together at the time. So I got one of the best DJs, two of the best DJs, and we have a soul singer. So I've got Desmond Grant, who's one of our top DJs down here, and LJ, who's a top DJ down here. Then I invited Stephen Bayliss, who's our sex symbol. He's like the Idris Elba of Preston.
Seriously? Okay.
So, well,
he's done the why then.
So I invited those guys down. I got to them and said, listen, why don't we do this? But remember, I've got no money to pay you because these guys cost a fortune to go out. So I said, I've got no money, but I feel that we should do it because they're our parents, grandparents, and in some cases, great-grandparents. And they said yes. And the first time we did it, 492 people turned up, which is the exact number that went on the first journey to Britain from on the Empire Windrush on June the 22nd, which is the day we're celebrating. I couldn't believe it.
Wow.
So we just had a great time. And then when everybody was leaving, they said, Adrian, you've got to do it again next year. And I went, okay. So that the first time, I think it cost me about £30 to hire the place and get some food for our elders. That was it. I didn't have any insurance, any first aid, didn't have any toilets now or anything. We just turned up to this place. And then the next year it doubled to 1,000, and last year it was 3,500. And so this year it looks like it's going to be even bigger. We've got 20 acts from Preston, and all who are doing it for nothing. If I was to pay the acts, it would cost me about £30,000 just for the acts, never mind everything else. And it's got such a family-friendly atmosphere. You won't believe it. Last year, like I said, there was 3,500 people. We were there for 8 hours. There wasn't ever a crossword said amongst everybody. And we had every race going who just seemed to just get on and enjoy the day. And our elders sat there with pride because it was all about them.
So this is fantastic that you're doing, and obviously you've got plans for that. What is the significance to you, and particularly the community in Preston Ran, now that has been recognised by the government for National Windrush Day?
Well, do you know what's so annoying about the National Windrush Day? They gave $500,000 out in funds. Now, the fact that we've been doing it for several years, you think that we would... Not guaranteed the money, but at least something. And we didn't get anything. And it was so disappointing. It was heartbreaking, to be honest, because we've been doing it for several years, and it's every penny that comes out of our organisation goes into this one day. And I don't know. It was. I'm still trying to stay calm about it now, because the thing that they said to us was that they didn't think we provided value for money. Now, when you put in so much effort in and you see the joy of everybody, and we talk about from the littlest baby to some people in the 90s who come there and enjoy the day, it's heartbreaking. Well, the thing for us, we're proud of ourselves that little old Preston decided to do it several years ago. We didn't need the government to say this is National Windrush Day. We decided it, and we decided that it's us who should. We're not listening to the government to tell us that we should acknowledge our parents and grandparents. We just should have done it, and we did do it. Does that answer the question?
It does answer the question, and I think it's very important. I mean, the government simply endorsed what was happening in the community. I think the £500,000 that was awarded by the Home Office is personally chicken feed. I know loads of groups that didn't get the money. You're not the only one. A lot of people feel quite angry that the amount of money was of small nature. Personally, the government should have been giving out about at least £2 million per annum. And I think that's one thing I'm going to be campaigning for. There should be more resources. It's not, yes, some organisations may not need the resources, but organisations like you and others I know, it makes a big difference because it means that you can put on bigger events, you can do other stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah, of course, because we've had to really go cap in hand to everybody. To put our event together, it costs about £5,000. So, which isn't a lot of money, because I've talked to... The thing about the Windrush Fund, what it's done is it's got me in contact with other London-based black organisations that are doing great jobs in their community too. They've contacted me and we've had really good discussions, and they've invited us down to London, so we can't wait to go and meet up with everybody. So it's, you know, we've met some friends out of it.
Mm.
But here in Preston, the council, the police, local authorities, they're still apprehensive about it, about supporting it for whatever reason. I don't know what it is, but they seem to be dragging the feet behind. Even though, like I said, we've done it for 7 years, there's been no trouble. The first year when I did it, I went to the police and I said, look, we're putting this event on. They said, no problem, you police it yourself. I went, oh, okay. The next year, they wanted to cancel it, and I said, why? And they were frightened that there's going to be a lot of black people walking around with their pants down by their ankles getting drunk. And I said, this isn't about gang culture. This is about us acknowledging and appreciating our elders. There's going to be none of that stuff going on.
That's absolutely shocking that they would say some rubbish like that.
Listen, it's not been... It's not been easy, and even up until this year, this one's been the worst with the amount of barriers that we've had put up.
So it's like to me that really that they don't really organise anything like this to commemorate our elders.
They don't, and I've got to say it. I don't want to say it, but I'm going to have to say it.
Don't worry, we can say it for you.
But there's some black people. There's some black people too who don't like it.
In what sense?
You know, this is the trouble with me. I can never keep my mouth shut.
Go on, Adrian.
We don't want you to be kind of marginalised in Preston forever. You can't go to the local pub or club or the West Indian Centre and be ostracised.
They've ostracised me anyway. There's just been a lot of skullduggery going on, a lot of jealousy. But sometimes that kind of stuff makes you even more determined, because I'm determined anyway. And when I see people trying to block what we're doing and haven't got a good reason for doing it, it makes me more determined that we should do it. And we've got a team here who are very like-minded, and we're not pushovers for anybody. It doesn't matter who they are.
Right. Now you've got the platform now, so please tell all the listeners where they can come down to your event and have a great time.
It's at Vernon's Cricket Club in Preston, Penwitham. We're starting at 12 o'clock. We have 20 acts, including Barbados stick fighting, funky Latin fusion dancing. We've got the sexy Stephen Bayliss. We've got a reggae band called Jamaica. We've got all the top DJs around here.
In Preston, that is, yeah.
In Preston. It's a fantastic family fun day. And it's all about our elders and about what they went through 71 years ago.
Okay.
And despite all the obstacles, they stuck with it, and they're still here today.
Fantastic. Adrian, is your event ticketed or is it free?
Despite us not getting any funding, I don't know how we do it, but it's still free to come in.
Okay, and that is taking place on what date?
June the 23rd.
Fantastic. Adrian Morrell, if people want to get in touch with you, where can they reach you online?
They can get on my Facebook page, which is Windrush Initiative CIC in Preston.
And thank you so much for joining us all the way in sunny Preston. We wish you all the best for your event. But for now, take care.
And have a drink
Thanks,
on me.
Guys. Thank you.
Okay, no problem. Thank you, Adrian. Take care.
Colourful radio.
And now we're joined by the chairman of Reach Society, Dwayne Neal. Good morning, Dwayne.
Good morning, Sinai.
I'm also joined by my co-host, Mr. Patrick Vernon.
Hi there, Dwayne.
Good morning, Patrick.
Yeah. Hi. Now, firstly, could you just introduce yourself for our listeners and tell us about your role at your organisation?
Okay. My name, as you've been told, is Dr. Dwayne Neal. I'm the chairman of Reach Society, which was founded in 2010. We often describe Reach Society as an award-winning social enterprise because in 2017, Reach Society won the Queen's Award for Voluntary Service for the work that we've been doing to encourage, motivate and inspire young people in London and the South East, and certainly in the last 2 years in Wolverhampton and Leicester.
Okay, fantastic. Patrick, I'll hand over to
you. Yeah, so obviously I've worked closely with your organisation over a number of years, and obviously your main focus is around empowering young people in terms of their future careers and development. But obviously this links into the wider context of the Windrush generation and legacy, and you have proposed something that we should be doing to commemorate the Windrush generation. Do you want to explain to our listeners about that?
Yes, thank you, Patrick, for the opportunity to talk about it. The idea that was launched in January of this year is known as Windrush Day Thanksgiving in the Family. And that idea was prompted by the Windrush Day commemoration that Theresa May's government announced last year, and it was celebrated for the first time in Westminster Abbey and around the country. And we believe that by encouraging families in the black community to have their own Windrush Day Thanksgiving in the family, the significant development of Windrush Day should never die. And I have a good reason for saying that it runs the risk of dying, and happy to talk about that if you like.
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
Okay. I have been aware of the REACH report, which was published at the end of 2007, and that was the trigger for the REACH National Role Model Program, which started in 2008. After 18 months of operation, that program, which was designed to inspire young boys and black young men to develop themselves, ended. And it ended with the arrival of the coalition government under Cameron and Clegg. So what we saw was something that had good potential to help our young people, but with a change of government, there was a sense of NIH, not invented here, and that program died. I have the suspicion that the same thing will happen to Windrush Day. As we're all aware, Theresa May's government has put £500,000 into a Windrush grant. And that money, I believe, should now have been allocated to community groups, local authorities and the like. But we're also aware that Theresa May is no longer Prime Minister. My suspicion is new Tory Prime Minister, new government this year, next year, will have a similar sense of NIH. And the funding will dry up and the whole impact of Windrush Day will dry up with it. That's just my personal suspicion.
In terms of your suspicion, obviously, in terms of government, you're quite right around that. But as you know, there's been lots of grassroots organisations over the years organising their own Windrush Day. Theresa May simply endorsed it. But you're quite right. I think the question is about the legacy. And you've got proposals around that, haven't you?
Yes. The underlying legacy will be realised if families in the black community take this specific action, and this is what we've encouraged by launching the Windrush Day Thanksgiving in the Family, that the adult members of the family bring their children and grandchildren together on the first Sunday following Windrush Day. So if you think about 2019, this year, Windrush Day is on a Saturday. So we're suggesting the very next day, the Sunday, the adults in black families bring their children and grandchildren together and tell them three things. Tell them of their experiences of living in the UK. Tell them of their understanding of how the black community has developed over the 71 years since 1948. And also tell them of their hopes and dreams for their children and grandchildren in the future. If those three things are shared and discussed at the family level, the story of our modern black community will be understood widely, not only by the adults in our families, but also by their children and grandchildren. And that will have the power of being transmitted from one generation to the next, if only we were to take that step, take that responsibility for starting and sustaining that conversation at the family level.
I think that's a fantastic idea.
Is that over rice and peas?
Over rice and peas, over fish and chips, over curry goat, over oxtail, over whatever you like.
Some fried plantain for me, please.
Fried plantain, ackee and saltfish, you name it, over whatever you fancy.
That sounds like a fantastic idea. I mean, for me myself, it sounds like something that I will be adopted in my household for sure.
Absolutely. And, you know, the beauty of the idea we've been promoting is you don't need a government grant to do it. Mm. All you need is the will at the family level to recognise that Windrush Day has huge significance for our community. I'm particularly attracted to it because the citation said this is to commemorate the contribution of the Windrush generation and their descendants to the UK since the ending of the Second World War. Now, when I listen to those words, it says Windrush generation and their descendants. They're talking about people like you, Patrick, and me as children of Windrush generation. They're also talking about my four children and your children, who are the grandchildren of the Windrush generation. And I believe they're talking about future generations still to be born. So if we embrace it and understand the full importance and significance of Windrush Day, then it should never die, and it should never, ever rely on handouts from government or any other source.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your hopes for Windrush Day with us. I mean, I will be partaking in that. What about you, Patrick?
Well, definitely. And don't forget, I have a board game that you can use on that day as well.
Absolutely. And if you'd like a plug for the board game, when I heard of your board game, I went out last year and bought it as a Christmas present for my family. And we had a whale of a time playing it. It's packed with useful information, all of which help us to understand our story. So yes, if families are willing to get a copy of the board game, what a wonderful trigger for the conversation that we've been talking about.
Your £5 note will on its way in the brown envelope. Okay, £10.
Patrick, you know me well enough. I wouldn't say it if I didn't mean it.
Oh, Dwayne Neal, chairman of Reach Society, thank you so much for joining us on the Voices of Windrush with me, Sinai Fleury, and the wonderful Patrick Vernon.